what is it? It's 10:15, and you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble. And of course, it's the third Thursday of the month, and we have Fred Malone with us. Hey, Fred, can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes, I can.
Good morning. I'll knock off that music. It's a little noisy. Oh, yeah. I was a little afraid because I saw we were running short of our news and stuff, and I thought, oh, Fred's not going to call in. Okay.
Well, I didn't have the radio on, so I couldn't tell where you were, but yeah. I was watching my clock here, and I think it's pretty well synced to what you are. So.
Yeah, and unfortunately, for some reason or other, our news and everything else only lasted like 13 minutes. So
that's what they call a slow news day.
Yeah, I guess. I like slow news days.
Nothing monumental happened.
Right. Scott said to me, well, we did put on a fatal accident, and but he said it was out of the county, but he said there's nothing else to talk about.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that. They had a fatality somewhere.
Yeah, in Delaware, I think it was.
Oh, okay. there was a bizarre one on yesterday morning on ABC Channel 6 had it on. Apparently, it must have started out as a domestic, and maybe you heard this, but must have started out as a domestic, and it was near a gas station or a 7-Eleven, something like that. And apparently a man and a woman got into it, and he hit her with his automobile.
Ooh.
And ran over her and then fled. And by the time the police were called and got there, apparently the body had been run over 7 or 8 times with other cars.
Oh, my goodness.
It's kind of a bizarre thing. You don't usually hear about something like that.
Probably after the first time, it didn't make much difference.
Well, but, I'm sure after the first one or two, you know, the person was already deceased. But you kind of wonder why someone wouldn't see a body laying in the middle of the road and run over
it. Or it might have been right at a turn place or something where.
Well, and it was dark. I will give it that. But I don't know. Just kind of a bizarre thing.
Well, that sure is.
To happen. But
I don't even like to run over a dead animal.
I know.
On the road.
I know. I'm with you. And of course, especially if it happens to be a skunk, if you run that over, you're going to carry that smell with you for.
You don't want to do that.
Quite a while. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's a slow news day today.
Which is
course,
good. Yeah.
I will say I just checked, and the Dow is up slightly, which is good because it took a pretty good beating the other day.
It did indeed.
But it is on the upswing now. Now, how long that lasts is anybody's guess, but I'm going to guess when it dropped that 600-and-some points day before yesterday, it was probably had something to do with the Israeli-Palestinian thing.
That's my guess as well. Nobody wants to see you've lived as long as
I have. A long time.
And you and I have seen so many times where the Middle East just explodes, and it only explodes for a few weeks.
Yeah, generally. They're generally pretty short wars or skirmishes, whatever you want to call them. But the problem is, of course, this day and age, and not so much back in the 50s and 60s, but everyone has missiles now, and so everything was more highly destructive than what it used to be when it was mostly ground fighting. So
I find it amazing. They show the pictures, and I don't know what I'm seeing, but they show the pictures of the missiles going up in the air, and then a whole bunch of them kind of twist around themselves, and one of them takes off on a long run.
Yeah.
I just wonder if that's that Iron Dome thing that's confusing.
It must be. I can't think of anything else that would create that. So
yeah.
That's obviously what's going on. But
well, that's amazing in itself, to have an Iron Dome.
It's a shame, you know, that it has to continue to go like that. But, you know, this has been going on for thousands of years.
Yeah, I guess.
So
I guess
it isn't anything that's new. The only thing that's different is the armaments have changed.
Well, and thousands of years ago, the Israelis didn't have the power.
That's
now
true.
They have the power.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, what are we going to talk about today?
On a lighter note, we're going to talk about fads, and if we have time, fashions. And these are all things that occurred in history. I like to call it America's forgotten history. I think, as I said once before, Reader's Digest used to have a couple of segments in there that I thoroughly enjoyed when I was in my teens and younger. They had a segment called Forgotten History, and they also had one, My Most Unforgettable Character. And I liked both of those, and over the years, they've been printed and reprinted in various periodicals and so forth, and kind of gathered a group of those. And so this morning, I think we'll We'll probably only have enough time to cover fads, but if we do, we'll move into fashions. And most of these that we're going to talk about today are either in the late 1900s or the early, or the late 19th century or the early 20th century. So, like from about 1870 up to 1930, maybe something like that. That's the time frame. And some of these fads that that were very popular back in the day aren't so much popular anymore because time has evolved and things have changed. But I find them very interesting, and, of course, people of our age are probably going to be more likely to remember what some of these things were, not because we necessarily lived through them, but because we'd heard of them or heard from our grandparents or even our great-grandparents in some cases. So I think it'll be an interesting subject, and I hope our listening audience enjoys what we talk about. Before we do that, I want to mention a couple of things quickly, kind of give updates. Marion County Historical Society, of course, is now open for the season.
Fantastic.
Our regular hours are Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4. So the museum is obviously open today since this is Thursday.
Yep.
There is a minimum charge, and again, I keep forgetting to ask what the charge is, but it's minimal. And again, you get two museums for the price of one when you come in. So you not
Can't
only get the Marion County Historical Society's museum, which is comprised of two floors, but you also get the Wyandotte Popcorn Museum, which is one of a kind, the biggest and largest collection of popcorn-related material in the world. Because we get people that actually literally come from all over the world to see just the Popcorn Museum and are pleasantly surprised when they find that they're getting another museum for the same price of the ticket.
Sure. So. I wish. Now, I've been looking for this since we moved to Marion, so since 2004. Mm-hmm. I've been looking. My father was Orville Redenbacher's minister.
I think you mentioned that to me once before. Yes.
But Orville gave Dad one of his bow ties.
Oh, really?
And I was certain I had it, but I can't find it. But if I do find it, I'm dedicating it to your
Oh, that man. Would be a wonderful addition. Orville Redenbacher was a parade marshal here years ago for one of the popcorn parades.
And his daughter, I got his daughter to come back about 10 years ago and be the parade marshal two times, maybe, or at least
that's
once.
That's a great history. Yes, we would love to have something like that.
If I can find it, you got it.
Yeah, great. That's absolutely fantastic. And, of course, we owe the Wyandotte Popcorn Museum to George Brown, who, of course, has now passed away. But George, who was the instigator getting the museum started, and from its tiny beginnings, it's now, of course, moved to our facility and has been there for a number of years. And for those people that have never seen it, it is under a big circus tent. So in the back part of our building, we have a rather large room, and it's completely engulfs that room, this
That's
big,
cool.
large circuit, red and white circus tent that you might see, you know, if you went to a circus.
Sure.
And, of course, we have, not only do we have popcorn machines that evolved from from about 1870 on up, but we have wagons that were pulled by horses where they sold popcorn and usually roasted nuts in parks and on street corners and so forth. And we also have a Model T Ford truck that was built specifically to sell popcorn and roasted nuts from. So.
Huh. Well, you know, one of the things that bothered me when I moved to Marion, having come from Valparaiso, Indiana, which also has a popcorn festival, and was the home... Well, there are three popcorn festivals. There's ours, there's Valparaiso, and then there's also Brazil, Indiana, which is where Orville was born.
Right.
But when I moved here, I was very upset that every time I went to the popcorn festival, nobody sold popcorn.
I was going to say, I know exactly what you're going to say. The same thing happened to me. I started working for the Sheriff's Department in 01 and really hadn't frequented the popcorn festival before, so of course I went, you know, and I was said the same thing. Where's the popcorn?
Well, now you can get it everywhere.
And of course the museum, not so much during COVID, obviously, but it's always been our practice for years and years and years, when you left the museum after your tour, you got a bag of popcorn.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah, you
That's
got a box
nice.
Of popcorn. We make it fresh every day, or we did. I don't know what they've decided for this year. Probably they haven't started doing it yet until everything's released on COVID, but That's always been the practice. Included in your admission was a free box of popcorn when you left the facility on your way out the door. So
well, that's pretty cool.
That's been going on for, well, as long as I've been involved, and I've been involved with the museum since 2004, so a long time.
Yeah.
But anyway, we are open for business, and I will encourage people to stop and see. You know, I run into people and I say, have you been up to the museum? Oh, yeah, I was there 10 years ago. Nothing changes. That's not right. As you probably know, and I think I've mentioned before, the atrium, the main room of the museum, we change that exhibit every year.
Mm-hmm.
The girls always have a theme set up for every year. And, of course,
cool. This
year we're... Since we were closed the majority of last year, our theme has carried over, and it's the 1920s, highlighting, of course, 1920 when Warren Harding was elected president. So this is the first time that we really haven't changed the main exhibit because of the COVID. But they did tweak it some over the winter and have added some additional things in there. So it does change. And for those people that say, oh, yeah, I've been there before, well, you maybe haven't seen very much because there are only certain things that stay the same and the other things change. So you need to actually make a trip to the museum at least once a year to see the new exhibit.
Well, I must admit, I've been a very bad boy and haven't been in.
I've been in once. You know, there's people that have lived in this city and in this county their whole lives and have probably never been there.
Yeah.
And I grew up I was born in Scioto County, but I grew up from the time about the sixth grade on in Hocking County.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that were born and raised in Hocking County had never been out to the state parks, had never gone through Old Man's Cave or Ash Cave or Cockles Hollow, Cedar Falls, whatever.
It's too close. Too close.
So, yeah, it isn't unusual, and, of course, it goes along the same old adage that, you know, an auto mechanic, his car always gets fixed last because he's too busy with everybody else, and I think that's the problem. You know, you live in these areas that have this wonderful tourist history, but you always go someplace else to see somebody else's history.
Sure do.
You don't pay attention to your own.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's only 111 days, 13 hours and 32 minutes till the Popcorn Festival starts.
Boy, you've got it right down to the...
I have it in my phone.
Well, anyway, again, just to reiterate, we are open Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4, for a minimum charge. You get two museums in the price of one. Also, I want to mention that Lynn School will be opening in the first weekend in June. Of course, most people know that we had a terrible accident out there about a year and a half ago now, where a semi-truck ran into the side of the building and destroyed a considerable amount of the building.
Yeah.
It has been rebuilt, and they were fortunate enough to be able to salvage the brick, and so the brick is the original brick.
Is that out on 4?
It's on Route 4 North. And it's back to what it was when the Hamiltons had it originally restored close to 20 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be opening for the first weekend in June, and it's always open on Saturday and Sunday, 1 to 4.
Okay.
So starting the first weekend in June, I think, which is probably the first, second, third, something like that, you'll be able to stop by the museum. There is no charge for Lynn School. If you'd like to make a donation when you go in, you can certainly do that. But there is no charge for Lynn School. And it's a great opportunity to see what kids went through going to a one-room schoolhouse. In this particular case, the late 1800s up into 1947, I think, was the last time that the school was utilized for students. So, and interestingly enough, up Route 4 was the old interurban. So some kids were able to catch the interurban and ride to school. Others either rode a horse or walked.
When I first came here, I was in the Marion leadership class, and it was, I think, 9 months, and you went to all these different locations.
Did Randy Wendland teach that?
No, it was, I can't remember her name. Oh, shoot. She was out at OSUM. Mm. I can see her face. Gorgeous blonde. I can't remember.
I remember that part.
Hera. And I can't remember her first name. Anyway, when I was going through that, I thought, well, this would be a terrific town with all the stuff that we have to have bus tours, encourage people, quite often there are old folks' homes or there are senior citizens, things that, take bus tours all over the place.
Absolutely.
Be a great day tour for a bus. Do we ever encourage that sort of
thing? Oh, absolutely. We get quite a few of them every year.
Oh, good.
Most of them are come through the CVB, but their stops usually include, of course, the Harding Home, the museum, the theater. Not so much Lynn School, but they usually hit most of the major attractions here in town. So,
cool.
Yeah, we get a lot of those.
Excellent.
And usually they will have a step-on guide that's local, and George Kasotis has done that for years.
Oh, he would know.
And also Jan Augenstein, who portrays Mrs. Harding.
Fantastic.
Acts as a step-on guide. And Charlie used to do that quite often.
Uh-huh.
He was a step-on guide as well.
Too.
He ran the CVB years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I think we're getting close, aren't we?
Oh, I'm sorry. They have decided to take our spots out.
Oh, okay.
Of my show, because we have, you know, we talk so long. So, if you want to just keep on plowing ahead, go
ahead.
Okay,
all right. Are you still doing the one at 11?
No. Yes, on the hours
the
we're still doing.
The 15-minute one, okay.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that is something that is done quite often. Now, obviously, since COVID, there have not been any.
Yeah.
And we also get a lot of bus tours that come specifically for our lunches and our dinners with the presidents, too.
Well, do you get more than one busload?
I'm sorry?
Do you get more than one busload?
Oh, yes, yes.
I would guess you would, yes.
In fact, I remember one luncheon that we did when we were still doing our luncheons out at the old telephone office where the sheriff's department is now.
Mm-hmm.
We used to use that upstairs room. And I remember one particular luncheon. Then we had three full buses.
Fantastic.
It was 60 per bus or 50 per bus. That was 150 people just on buses.
I hope they made reservations.
They did. We have to do that.
Yeah,
we have to do reservations. We always have a cutoff date on those. But, yeah, we had three buses come in that particular day. It was the biggest luncheon we ever had. I think we had over 200 people for a lunch.
Wow, that's fun.
Which is tremendous. Yeah. And I usually greet the buses as they come. I'll walk on board and introduce myself, and I'm usually portraying Governor John Bricker, who was governor during the war, during World War II here.
How do you introduce yourself? Do you get on and say, I'm Governor
John? Absolutely, and I'm campaigning for re-election, and I don't know whether you're from Ohio or not, but if you're from Ohio, I'd certainly appreciate your support, and blah, blah, blah. And
I love it.
And then sometimes they won't know where they're going. They might be it might be one of these they call a mystery trip.
Oh.
So in this particular luncheon, which I think was 5 or 6 years ago, there was a bus group coming from Indiana, and they were all Amish.
Oh,
a bus group of all Amish folks, and they were on a mystery tour. So they had no idea where they were coming, where they were going. And I did happen to talk to the tour director before I stepped on the bus, and I found out where they were headed from here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of held that over their heads. They were going over to Mansfield to the Bible Museum.
Oh, okay.
The Living Museum over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I held that over their heads. I said, I know this is a mystery trip, and this is a mystery for you today. And I, of course, introduced myself as Governor Bricker and told them today they were going to have lunch with four American presidents. And, of course, you should have seen their faces. They didn't know what to think. And then I said, well, I do know where you're going from here, but it's a government secret, so I can't tell you what it is. But you know what? Those folks had an absolutely wonderful time.
Wonderful.
I was surprised to learn that they knew a lot about early history.
Oh, I'm
and
sure
of course,
they
I think
yeah.
most of them only go 8 grades.
Mm-hmm.
If they go that far.
But
so,
that's important to them.
It is.
Yes.
It is. And so I think that day I had all presidents that were, you know, fairly early. I think the latest one I had was maybe Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all pretty early. And they knew those presidents, and they asked questions. So they really, really enjoyed themselves.
Mm.
But, yes, bus tours have been a huge part of our lifeblood when we started doing these, especially the dinners, as we'll oftentimes get 3 or 4 buses at dinners. And truthfully, Glenn, they come from everywhere. We've had them from Michigan. We've had them from Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, all over, not just Ohio.
Yeah.
So word has spread throughout the Midwest as to what we do here.
Good.
And unfortunately, COVID, of course, put a dent in it because we weren't able to have a dinner last year. So we're hoping that the one that we have scheduled for November will do well again, because it's not unusual for us to have 300 people.
I would guess that there there may be some weekend tours where all they do is go around and look at presidential homes.
Oh, that's true. In fact, we just had, the girls were telling me when I was up at the museum the other day, we just had there was a small group that came in, mm-hmm. and that's what they were doing. They were touring all the presidential sites in Ohio.
Yeah, because, what is it, seven? Something like
well,
that?
Well, technically seven. We like to claim eight because we share Harrison.
Okay.
And, of course, he was born in Ohio. So,
okay.
So technically, if you count Harrison, there's actually eight different sites. So.
Okay.
And, of course, now with the Harding site open, the new site open,
yeah.
They'll not only get...
Oh, it's open now?
It is open now.
Okay.
I think they had their soft opening last week for members only, and then I think they're open right now. I don't know the hours.
Okay.
I would imagine if you went on the website, you know, maybe just type in Warren Harding Home and Museum, you'd probably get the information from there. But I think they're going to have a grand opening maybe sometime either in June or July.
But what is in the new building?
I don't know. I haven't been in there yet.
All right.
Have not been in there
they
yet.
They haven't
so.
Let our master of history in yet?
Nope, we haven't been in yet, so
okay.
I'll probably have to go in just like everybody else. But anyway, we are having a luncheon a week from today.
Mm-hmm.
It's our first luncheon with the presidents that we've had since last year. Well,
that's
actually,
nice.
Since 2019, because we had to cancel last year. I don't know whether it's too late to get a ticket. I know there were going to have to cut it off because of the caterer. They have to pre-order the dinners or the food. But if anybody's interested, they could call the museum at 740-387-4255 and check to see if there's still availability.
Okay.
I know we had a board meeting a couple of nights ago, and Brandy told me I think we had 61 people, which is not bad considering it's the first one we've had since COVID was kind of, you know, since some of the things were released.
Before COVID, how many were you getting?
Luncheons were usually somewhere between 75 and 80.
Nice crowd, yeah.
So we're not too far off.
Yeah.
And again, dinners will get 300. We usually try to cap it at 300. With the facility we're in now, we could probably push that up to 350. And we may do that this year if we get enough demand. But again, if they want to call and see if there's still availability, 740-387-4255, or go on the website, marianhistory.com, and they can check it out there or get the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
This year at the luncheon, I've got Martin Van Buren, Benjamin Harrison, Harry Truman, and George Washington speaking. Oh, and U.S. Grant.
George is showing up.
George is going to be there, yeah, and Ulysses Grant. So
four of them
are seasoned reenactors. One, Martin Van Buren, is a new gentleman from up around Pemberville.
Mm-hmm.
So we get our reenactors are pulled from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
That's about a two-hour drive for him just to get down here. So,
well, it's not demanding. It's not like you have to work every weekend.
No, exactly. But surprisingly enough, there's great interest in the reenacting group that we put together at the Marion County Historical Society. We can do, I think right now, I haven't counted recently, but I think we can do somewhere around 30 U.S. presidents.
Hmm.
And we only do presidents that are deceased. We do not do living presidents, obviously.
Yeah, that could get a little dicey.
Could get to dicey, yeah,
yeah.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, so anyway,
you have asked me, and I'm willing to think about it, and I've been thinking for a year
now.
I
asked you about James Buchanan.
That's right.
Who was our only bachelor president. So,
right. Are you saying something about me? I'll ask my wife. What's the story?
No, I just like to throw that out because, you know, and this is one of the things about the luncheons and the dinners. People learn a lot of history. That is our main goal.
Sure it is.
A lot of people are reluctant to sit down and read a book, especially a book about history.
Mm-hmm.
But people will listen if someone wants to tell them a story.
Absolutely.
And that's basically what our presidents are doing. They're telling stories, and they're telling, and I kind of leave it up to them. I say, you can either talk about your early childhood, you can talk about your presidency, you can talk about your post-presidency. It's entirely up to you. And so we get a nice mix.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they'll change it up. Maybe this dinner they'll talk about their early childhood, and maybe the next time they'll talk about post-presidency. And with these dinners, you can pay extra and sit with these presidents.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do we have presidents that are going to be featured and will speak in front front of everyone, but you can buy a ticket to sit with the president and sometimes the first lady and have dinner conversation with them while you're waiting for the program to start.
You know, one of the reasons why I really haven't started to twist your arm about doing that is that type of thing. You really have to know the president, don't you?
You really do.
Now, I've been reading, but I'm not good at it yet.
I credit the guys that portray their individual presidents, because generally, especially if they're doing just one, if they're concentrating on just one, mm-hmm. they will make themselves well-versed, because you never know what kind of questions you're going to get.
Yeah.
And because people can buy these tickets in advance, you occasionally get some history buff that's laying for you.
Oh, that would be mean.
You know, with a trick question.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to think fast on your feet. And if you don't know the answer, which it sometimes happens, you know, it's rare, but sometimes you may not know some little known fact. You have to be able to get yourself out of it without embarrassing yourself or going out of character. And that's the other thing that when we get the guys to do this reenactment, we always very specifically say to them, you're always in first person. Don't break character. Mm-hmm. These people are paying to sit with President Grant. Make sure you're always President Grant. Mm-hmm. Now, when the dinner's completely over with and people are leaving, if you want to, you know, go out of character, that's entirely okay. But mm-hmm. during the entire event, you are that person.
Well, I'd be good at that. My drama, as you know, my major in college was speech and drama.
Right.
And my drama professor always said the best thing I could do was stay in character.
Stay in first person. Yeah. Right, absolutely. Yeah, the last thing you want to do if you're telling a story is say he.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You don't want to do that because you are that person. So again, there may be some seats left. I'm not sure on that, but you can always call the museum and find out.
Sure.
And the other thing I wanted to mention real quickly, and we're probably eating up a lot of our time, although we're saving some time with breaks.
Yeah.
We are going to have our first ladies luncheon again this year. We obviously couldn't have it last year because of COVID, but we're going to have that this year, and that's going to be in August, on August the 7th. And I'll give you more information as we get a little bit closer to that. But I think they are starting to actually take reservations for those seats too, because again, both the men's luncheon and the ladies' luncheons are over at Tri Rivers in the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
So, limited space.
Yeah.
So, we'll probably keep those for around 100 people. That's comfortable. And that's going to be August the 7th. And this year, I have Jackie Kennedy.
Oh,
I have Margaret McCall Smith Taylor. I have Abigail Adams and Jane Appleton Pierce.
Huh.
So, those are four very interesting first ladies. First ladies that you may not hear too much about.
Except for Jackie.
Probably the only one that you might know a little bit about, obviously, is Jackie Kennedy.
Right. And that would be quite a challenge to be that person.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And one of my speakers for the President's dinner in November is Jack Kennedy. So that's going to be a challenge as well.
Yeah.
And the gentleman that I have portraying Jack Kennedy is also the gentleman that portrays Franklin Roosevelt. So I have no conception whatsoever that he won't do a marvelous job.
Good.
So,
all right.
Very exciting. A lot of good things coming up. Malabar, not open till the 1st of June. They'll start doing house tours then. Of course, the trails are open now anytime, both the foot trails and the equestrian trails if you ride horses. And the Mohawk Historical Society is still temporarily closed. Hopefully, they're going to be able to get that open in June, and we'll probably start doing some programming again in June. And I think I've mentioned this before with you, but the Mohawk Historical Society also owns an opera house in Melmore, beautiful downtown Melmore.
Melmore? Where's Melmore?
Melmore. That's up on Route 100.
Huh.
Just out, actually, across the line in the Seneca County.
And we
bought that a number of years ago. It's been completely refurbished. It's absolutely wonderful acoustics in there. A few years ago, we had the new Christy Minstrels perform there.
Fantastic.
And all of our program meetings are free of charge.
Cool.
So I'll keep everyone posted on when we have our first program meeting. It's fun just to go up and see the opera house. It does have an upstairs and a downstairs, and the guy that started the new Christy Minstrels, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but when he performed there, he came to us afterwards and said he'd performed in Carnegie Hall, and he thought that this was the most acoustically perfect venue that he'd ever performed in.
Well, you know, I sang with a folk trio for several years, and with the United States Army Field Band.
Right.
And we've been trying to get back together. 2 years ago, we were going to get back together.
Like a reunion group.
Yeah, and our lead singer, he was out in the parking lot waiting to come in. We were going to do it on our 50th anniversary of our school graduation.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah, and he went out in the parking lot, and some guy rolled him.
Oh, my
And beat him unconscious.
Oh,
so,
my word.
So
where
we were
this?
Unable to
this?
Do it. Now, it was in Valparaiso, India.
Oh, for crying out loud. Wow.
And so we've been trying for the last couple of years to figure out, where can we get together? Maybe I'll see if we can talk about it.
We've got the perfect location.
Yes.
Yeah, now it doesn't seat a whole lot. I think the capacity is like maybe 125.
Oh, that would be better than... We used to sing what we called Hoot Nannies in a little tiny theater in Valparaiso.
Yeah.
About 200.
Well,
yeah.
I wish I could think of the guy's name that started the New Christian Minstrels, because he's still doing it. He formed another group. And I just can't think of his name, but he's been there a couple of times, and we've had some really good group. We've had barbershop quartets there. We've had individual musicians there. We've had small groups there. It's just a great venue.
Yeah.
And we recently bought a house down the street and an additional lot, so we have more parking now. We didn't used to have a whole lot of parking, and Melmore, of course, is just a burg. You know, it's not very big at all. Maybe like going through Big Island, may have a few more houses and a few more buildings, but so parking is much better than it used to be, but that would be a perfect venue for something like that, and that's the kind of thing we're looking for, and we do pay. We will pay the entertainers.
Well, that would be nice too, but
so, especially if you got to do some traveling, you know, at least you'll get a little gas money out of it.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Both of them live, one of them lives in Reno, Nevada.
Oh, my.
And the other one lives in Florida, so they're both going to travel. But,
sure. But it would be really nice to get that reunion.
Might be fun. I'll Facebook them and see what they think.
Yeah, sounds great. Okay, well, let's talk about fads.
How do you spell Melmore before I close you out here?
M-E-L-M-O-R-E, just like it sounds.
Okay,
Melmore, Ohio.
Sounds very good. Thanks. Okay, go ahead.
It's in Seneca County.
Oh, by the way, you're not going to go over lawn jarts, are you, in the fads?
Do what?
Use lawn jarts as one of the fads.
No, I don't think I have that listed, because that didn't come along until a little bit later on.
No, and people got killed by hurt by those.
But you know what? I just saw an advertisement on TV the other day for something that looked like lawn jarts.
Yeah, they have them, but they're
But they're probably like a weighted
pointy.
End or something.
Yeah, they're
that doesn't
that
actually
pointy.
Have a point.
Right.
Oh, we used to play with those all the time.
I did, too.
Didn't think anything of it.
No. Matter of fact, we threw them at each other.
Well, we probably did a lot of things we shouldn't have done.
Mom wasn't watching, yeah.
Well, we're going to start out with something that I think is kind of interesting. And interestingly enough, we have one of these items I'm going to talk about at our museum. It's not currently on display, but a few years ago we took it up to the Inter-Museum Conservation Association group up in Cleveland and had it restored.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about a silhouette.
Okay.
Do you know what a silhouette is?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
It's a black figure that looks like a silhouette
that
of someone.
That was actually cut using a pair of scissors.
Yeah.
So you'd think George Washington's profile was copied in silhouette by nearly anyone and everyone who had access to a pair of scissors, because you seem to see his profile probably more than anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And given the abundance of those examples that still survive from the 1700s, there's still quite a few of them around.
Oh.
And, of course, they've been copied, obviously.
Yeah.
But then again, the new art of silhouette cutting was ideal for a young democracy. Now, this particular silhouette thing was named for a frugal French minister of finance called Antoine de Silhouette. And it was cheap to make cutouts. They were both snapshots of their day and the poor man's portrait. You know, you figure, you know, back in the day, a poor man couldn't go out and hire an artist to do a painting of someone in his family. But if they had someone talented or knew someone talented, for a lot less money, they could get a silhouette cut.
Sure.
So a person could have his likeness cut in the morning and hang it on the wall in the afternoon. For whole families, even would sit individually for a cutter and then be reunited against a watercolor or even a lithograph background. Now, the one that we have up at the museum is of an entire family. And we weren't too sure how old it was, so it needed some work. It was starting to deteriorate a little bit. So we took it up to the ICA, which is, by the way, the same place where I've taken all the oil paintings and so forth from Malabar to be redone.
Is that where they clean them and stuff?
Yes, yeah. They clean them. If there's minor repairs, they can do that.
Cool.
But this silhouette, we weren't quite sure what could be done. So we took it up. This has probably been maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Took it up, left them with it, because it had started to deteriorate, and what we thought was deterioration was actually some sliding that was occurring.
Sliding.
But we went back to pick it up a month or so later, and you could not believe the difference, the before and after difference in it. But they gave us a date of somewhere in the mid-1700s.
Wow. And we have the family name.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but we have the family name, and it was a Marian family that had this done. But it's the whole family, and if I remember correctly, there's like 8 characters in this silhouette. And the intricacy of a silhouette is what is amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
You think about someone taking a piece of, say, for instance, black construction paper and starting with a pair of scissors and making the precise cuts that you needed to come close to what the person looked like. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Amateurs could even give it a try, but they were no match for the experts. Like the prominent artist in the day was a guy by the name of William Henry Brown. Now, he was talented enough to snip freehand without so much as a sketch to go by. And a lot of people did sketch them beforehand and then would follow the tracings, you know, with the pencil mark.
Yeah.
But Brown attracted customers by advertising his skill at cutting portraits from memory. Can you imagine how good he must have been to be able to do this?
Wow.
Timelessly, he was very prolific in what he did. He even did an immortalized DeWitt Clinton. Remember the guy that invented the steam locomotive?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
In 1831. And a few years later, he cut silhouettes of the 65 members of the St. Louis Fire Engine Company to create a 20-foot-long group portrait, 20 feet long.
He would have made a lot of money this last year when they put all those cardboard cutouts in the baseball
stadium.
Stadiums.
Yeah, he probably would have, yeah. His chief rival was another Frenchman by the name of Auguste d'Étaires, who toured the United States from 1839 to 1849. Now, he was known to have cut some 10,000 elegant likenesses, including the country's leading politicians and literary figures of the day. Brown's and Edouard's silhouettes are also vying for attention these days on the internet. So if you would happen to type in either Brown or this Edouard, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right, but it's Edouart on the internet, you may see some of his work for sale on the internet. And I would imagine that it's probably going for some pretty high prices.
I would guess, yeah.
Yeah, William Henry Brown.
The fact that it lasted that long.
That long. Well, yeah. And look at the one that we have that was dated somewhere in the mid-1700s.
Paper doesn't last that long.
Still in almost pristine condition. And, of course,
fantastic.
The good thing about being in a museum now, all of our things are of course, stored in acid-free boxes or containers, whether it be plastic or paper or whatever the case might be. And obviously, a lot of things were lost over the years because they weren't stored that way. They were either put in scrapbooks that did not have acid-free paper, and the acid will eventually eat away the material. It does that with photographs as well.
Yep, it does.
So, fortunately, a lot of them have survived because of the fact that they end up in museums.
Mm-hmm.
Challenging such freehand geniuses were machine cutters, who backlit their subject against a screen and cut that from a tracing.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't just quite the same as those people that were obviously talented enough to do the freehand.
I can't imagine.
Some specialized in what they call hollow cut, which used only the silhouette's outline.
Oh.
But by the mid-century, such refinements really no longer mattered. By that time, the daguerreotype had arrived.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what the daguerreotype is. That's kind of the precursor to the modern-day photograph.
Right.
But however delightful, the silhouette simply couldn't compete with true-life images of the modern age. So they eventually disappeared in the early 1800s.
Yeah. Except, you know, there's still occasional artists at some of these craft fairs that do that.
Yes, and it also reminds me, I know years ago, this is a long time ago, at Cedar Point, they had the people that did the caricature sketches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They also had a person there that did a freehand cutout.
Oh,
I don't know if you ever remember that.
No,
or not,
I don't.
But I do. And that, I think that was back in Frontierline anyway, somewhere back there. Moving on to something that I think everyone will remember, especially people our age. I'll kind of precursor this with what occurred before, and then we'll move on into the other one. But it was kind of like magic, the way everything standed out in space. One customer made the comment of, the magic was wrought by the stereoscope. Remember the stereoscope?
Yeah, I sure do. Mm-hmm.
Very popular, early 1800s, clear up through probably 1890, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
This was a device that was used for taking a pair of photographs that were taken with a special stereo optic camera.
Right.
They were mounted on a rigid card. Usually they were kind of sepia-toned, which is that kind of a brownish color. And when you viewed this through this particular device, it merged into a single three-dimensional image.
Mm-hmm.
And you were looking, this contraption called the stereo optic had kind of a binocular lens, which when you looked through with both of your eyes, it formed that two pictures into one,
mm-hmm.
and you got that three-dimensional look. A mad fad for stereoscopes swept the country in the late 1800s. Of course, this was the days before radio, television, and motion pictures. Stereo optic emporiums sprang up in cities everywhere and did a really brisk business in pictures and sold the viewers and related paraphernalia. The public swamped the shops with requests for the latest of their favorite photographers. So there were actually guys that specialized in certain things. Like one would do maybe mountains, or one would do palaces,
Niagara
or
Falls.
City scenes. Niagara Falls, very popular, absolutely.
I have one of those.
Stereographers systematically churned out millions of these dual images, mostly views of world landmarks, like we said.
Mm-hmm.
And it was usually based on things that the average American would never get to visit,
mm-hmm.
because they just didn't have the money to travel.
Right.
Also, educational offerings were very popular. Trips to the Holy Land.
Mm-hmm.
There was a series that was endorsed by Pope Pius X.
I've also seen the Taj Mahal.
Another very popular one.
Yeah.
One set of images would push Americans to start preserving their most scenic of natural areas. In 1872, for instance, stereographs of the Yellowstone area of Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho helped convince a very reluctant Congress to create the world's first national park.
Oh, that's neat.
So they were very, very popular, very, very popular.
Yeah.
Now, personally, I have a couple of collections of stereo-optic cards.
Mine are all I think the acid is getting to them.
Starting to work to them.
Yeah.
Well, my collections involve Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
I have a collection of probably some 150 to 200 different views of Niagara Falls.
Of Niagara Falls alone.
I also collect Niagara Falls souvenirs from my earliest is 1860, and I concentrate on from 1860 to 1950. I don't go much farther than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other collection are stereograph cards of William McKinley.
I didn't know they did them of people.
Yes, absolutely. I have stereo optics of him pre-presidential, presidential, obviously, pictures of him in the White House, his inaugurations, pictures of his funeral. So I have quite a collection of those. Those are the two things that I mainly collect. I do have some national parks, too, early national park ones from the late 1800s, but it was very, very popular. And now, of course, those started to fade because at the 1939 New York World's Fair, which, by the way, my dad attended, Harold Graves and William Gruber introduced the Viewmaster.
Ah, yes.
And I think probably all of us that grew up in the
50s
had a Viewmaster.
Yeah.
I still have two. And again, I have Viewmasters of Niagara Falls and the national parks. But the Viewmaster really was a direct descendant of the stereoscope because it was kind of worked along the same principle.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
The round cardboard discs held 14 small slides of Kodachrome 16 millimeter color film. and one slide for each eye, creating that 7 three-dimensional images.
Yep.
So 14 pictures, but you got 7 images on the round card.
We're going to have to take our break here in about 10 seconds.
Okay, we'll hang on and finish
we'll
this up.
Do
on the
more
other
stereo
side.
Optics after we come back from the break.
Great.
Thanks, Rick.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio.